Good morning, DMV. It is Ben Standing here. I cover the Washington Commanders for my Substack, Last Man Standing, but I'm going to be here with you guys today from 11 to 1 p.m. Excited to be here. I got Young Wes behind the glass here. We'll get to talk a bit about the Commanders training camp. I say a bit. I mean, let's be realistic. If I'm going to be on the show, we're going to talk about the Commanders. And, of course, there are things to discuss. They just completed their third training camp practice yesterday, and it's too early to make a lot of declarations. The pads haven't even been on yet. That's going to come, though, on Monday, tomorrow. They are off today at practice. If you're wondering, well, yes, I'm here because they are off today. That kind of works out hand in hand. But we got things to discuss. We'll talk about what does it mean, the fact that the pads are coming on. We're going to have to talk about some of these injuries that have cropped up, and it leads to the question of not necessarily who are the best players on the team. I think we kind of know, can maybe have a, well, that's one debate. But another one is that I always like to look at is, who are the most indispensable players? Sometimes it's not somebody that you would put in the top 10 list of, say, the best players. But if all of a sudden this player goes out, you look at a depth chart and you're like, oh, wait a minute. This is a lot more uncertain than maybe it needs to be or is. So I'm going to discuss that, and it's also my observations on what I've seen so far out there the first few days. Mitch Tischler from Monumental Sports will join me in the 12 o'clock hour, as will our guy Ryan Clary here, of course, part of the JP, B Mitch and JP Finley show here middays. Ryan is a Nats guy as well, and Major League Baseball trade deadline rapidly approaching. A huge deal yesterday in baseball that has a lot of people angrier than they already are angry at the situation involving the Los Angeles Dodgers. Not that the Dodgers did anything wrong or nefarious, but acquiring the best player at the trade deadline, seemingly yet again, because they're the only team that appears to be, has the money to spend, the willingness to spend. It just makes it feel less competitive than it needs to be. And of course, the Dodgers have been, you know, a significant contender almost every year for the last umpteen years, and won the World Series last year. They already have a bunch of great pitchers, hitters, and what do they do here? What is the deal with Major League Baseball? This may be why there's a lockout looming for next year. So we'll get to all that here on 106.7 The Fan. If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. We'll take calls in the starting the next segment if you want to call in, and I would probably, it'll say, let's talk Commanders. We can get maybe more calls on the Nats in the second hour, but I want to hear from you guys, and especially if you guys were out at practice yesterday. Yesterday was the first day for fans. You know, if you're just into football, obviously it's pretty cool to get to watch professional football players go through the drills. Obviously, practice is not a game. Cue up the Allen Iverson soundbite here. But, you know, it's still cool. Obviously, if you have kids, that's a, you know, what a day to be able to see, you know, your favorite players, Jaden Daniels, run around. If you're a bit of an older cat like myself, there was some legit nostalgia out there yesterday. John Riggins and Daryl Green were both out there. The team announced both of them are going to be sort of more involved with the organization this year. Daryl Green sort of on the community service side. John Riggins is going to be in the preseason booth along with Brian Mitchell, and Dan Helly will be doing play-by-play. Dan Helly, of course, former NBC4 sports anchor, local guy, NFL Network for many years. Great call there to go with Helly. Excited for him for sure. So that made it an extra layer of fun, you could say, I guess, yesterday. I don't get starstruck anymore when it comes to athletes. I mean, I haven't been for a long time, especially in part because I'm like significantly older than most of them. And, you know, obviously some guys are just a, you know, huge deal, like Jaden Daniels. There's a lot that comes with his celebrity on top of being a really good football player. But for me, you know, I can still feel like a 12-year-old kid again when, like, I'm like 2 feet away from John Riggins, who gave me, you know, one of the great childhood memories that I have. The, of course, touchdown run against the Miami Dolphins to help clinch or help win Super Bowl 17, Washington's first Super Bowl win ever. And all the iconic moments from Riggins down the line, they include when he got off the field, being part of, if you, those of you who remember, George Michael was kind of the king of this town for a while. Sports anchor, again, at Channel 4. And they would do a weekly show, panel show. It would be George Michael, John Riggins, Sonny Jurgensen. And then they would rotate an analyst or a reporter. David Aldridge was on it for a while, Michael Wilbon, et cetera. And Riggins was the equivalent of Charles Barkley, the way Barkley is on TNT. You never know what he's going to say exactly. He can get away with saying things that just normal people can't. And I think in a preseason situation where, if we're realistic, you know, you get to the third and fourth quarter of some of these games and you're like, boy, I guess I'm just really legit rooting for laundry here. You know, there's always some interesting battles. I'm not getting, not saying it's not, but you know, fourth quarter in a preseason game can get long, and that is where storyteller Riggins could come in handy. So I think that would say some good news there, some good work by the Commanders organization. And I will just say, you know, we have talked over the years about how things have changed post the ownership of you-know-who, or by you-know-who. And, you know, obviously last year from a win-loss perspective was brutal. But in terms of an organizational competency perspective, it's, you know, not close for everything that we all know compared to where it was in the Dan Snyder era. And one example of that is the fact that John Riggins is back. John Riggins stayed away for many years from this place, as did a lot of the alumni. I mean, Daryl Green wasn't around a ton. Most of these guys, you know, of note, really had stayed away because they just did not like the direction of the organization, how the owner was handling everybody, treating the alumni, whatever. They've done them. The organization has done a lot better job getting alumni back in the mix in recent years under Josh Harris. And John Riggins had stayed away. I remember when he came back a couple of years ago, I was there. It was like a military, some sort of like a military appreciation day, and Riggins was there and he was explaining that, hey, I just didn't really need to be a part of this organization. To go from that to he's now going to be on the preseason broadcast. And he was out there yesterday at camp. That's a big deal. I don't recall ever seeing Riggins out there. I'm sure he probably has at some point. I'm just blanking, but I don't recall in the years that I've been covering the team. And to have Riggins and Daryl Green together, Daryl Green's been around a little bit more. You know, he's just been more rounded just in general. If we make the list of who have been the best players in modern franchise history, let's not include Sammy Ball, basically, is what I'm saying. I mean, you can make the argument that the top two on that list are John Riggins and Daryl Green. And the fact that they were both there at the same time, I mean, we've seen, you know, I was there when Art Monk and Gary Clark and Ricky Sanders were at a training camp practice a few years ago. I was there when, you know, Joe Theismann has certainly been around. I hadn't seen Sonny Jurgensen out there in his, you know, later years, rest in peace. But, you know, obviously he was associated with the team for many years. I can't imagine there was a scenario in which in I don't know, this century, that you had two players at that high up on the list of the best ever simultaneously together at a training camp practice. And maybe that's getting lost on some of the younger people. I get it. But it's a big deal, not just, again, from the nostalgia perspective, but where the organization is, the buy-in that they're getting, you know, certainly from the alumni in this case, even from the fan perspective. You know, we as media know, so the typical practice day out there, Dan Quinn holds his pre-practice press conference anytime they practice, 8 o'clock in the morning. Your boy here is not a morning person. I've never been one, pretty much not since college, but in this industry, when I covered the Wizards for a long time, you know, I'm not even done work until like midnight. And I've kept up that pace of just not being a morning person. So getting up at like 6 o'clock in the morning is a chore for your guy. But I have to get up even earlier on the day that the fans show up, because the fans are, we're all using the same parking lot, and it gets busy. It's crowded. This year, if you've ever been out to the park, when you pull into the main driveway, I guess it's Joe Gibbs Drive, to the right, there's a huge plot of land there. That's where people park. That's where we park on a regular day when nobody's there. With the fans, though, again, we're all in the same spot. And usually, if I get there around, like, say, 7:10, something like that. I'm usually parking about halfway down the lot. Here, I pulled in yesterday at about the same time, and I was like basically the last row to get in. Fortunately, I worked that out. People showed up in mass. I doubt there was more people because it can only hold so many, but the fans were pumped that the line was wrapped around the lot. And again, it's funny. I mean, this is a team coming off a 5-win season and everybody is still pumped to go. Jaden Daniels obviously has a lot to do with that, but football in general, people are all over this place. But you know, again, if you know, there were times when in the Dan Snyder era where just nobody was showing up. And it's just a reminder, again, it's wins and losses. Understandable. You guys want to know, do they have enough receiver to help Jaden Daniels? Is this defense? A lot of hype here about what's going to be different under new coordinator Durante Jones. Is this all going to play out so this defense is not just a complete sieve the way it was a year ago? All that's a good question. But to a degree, it all starts with from the top down. And they have just done a much, much better job of being on top of their stuff, being organized, being professional. And again, you don't have to take my word for it, but you can take the word of the two guys who are arguably the best players in franchise history who have now said, yeah, not only are we going to be show up at events, we're going to be directly tied to the organization in these ways. So I think just a very cool sign for, you know, kind of the health of the business side, the culture side of the franchise. And now we talk about the actual football side of the franchise. I wanted to start off here the show. Injuries and indispensability. We'll get to that next here on 106.7 The Fan. All right. Welcome back to 106.7 The Fan. Again, I'm Ben Standig. I cover the Washington Commanders for my Substack, lastmanstandig.substack.com. Also have a podcast with the same name, Last Man Standig. But of course, if the Commanders are doing things, I'm probably going to be there. And I was out there for all of the activity this week. Adam Peters and Dan Quinn's press conference on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday practice, Saturday practice, first one with fans. And I'll be there on Monday when they put the pads on, which is always the most, I don't know if it's, for me, it's probably the most exciting day of camp because it changes the level of the intensity without question. I was just driving in and to the station. I was listening to Sirius XM, and I think it was Brad Hopkins, former NFL lineman, was asked about the difference between pad day and non-pads. And he said, it's like no pads. It's like, you know, you're messing around with your buddy. You may be doing some like slap boxing, you know, the pads means you're going at each other and the punches are flying. I don't mean that these guys are going to be throwing haymakers at each other, but the aggressiveness cranks up. So it's exciting to see that. Should be a lot of fun there. Now, that also means we get to see more of the line play. Up till this point, going all the way back to minicamp and OTAs and all that, and people want to say, so how is, you know, how's it looking at the left guard battle between Brandon Coleman and Chris Paul? How's the new defensive line playing out? What, you know, how's Deron Payne doing, et cetera? Even the coaches will tell you, like on the record at the mic, that there's real, this isn't even for them. Until the pads come on, this is not the time to really check out the line play. But now that, I mean, there's obviously some things, fundamentals and, you know, understanding kind of where you need to be on the play, you know, and things like that. But in terms of the actual production performance, now it gets interesting. Of course, that leads to what's going on with the line play. And this leads into the question that I teased at the top. Injuries and not so much who is valuable, but who is indispensable. Valuable can be a different thing. Jaden Daniels is going to be very high on that list, obviously, on both of those lists. Same with Terry McLaurin. If those guys are out, there are huge problems. I mean, especially the quarterback. But we saw what happened last year without Terry McLaurin. The receiver room was just not built to handle that. I think they have more depth this year, but it's still, you don't have anyone at his level. Now, you wouldn't put, say, Nick Allegretti on the list of the 10 best players on this team. I think Nick Allegretti himself would probably agree with that. But if we're just talking indispensable, I think that's going to have to, I think Nick Allegretti is a very, very strong candidate for being on that list. It's because, perhaps much to the chagrin of people listening, is that there's a lot of uncertainty from the outside, at least, about the center position. Dan Quinn and Adam Peters the other day explained in great detail with some passion as to why they feel comfortable with Nick Allegretti at center, having moved on from Tyler Biadasz during the offseason. They talked about Allegretti's smarts, not necessarily just from like a GPA SAT level, although he was a four-time All Big Ten academic, first team, you know, all academic team, but his understanding of line calls, what he's seeing, what the defense is showing, that they believe they're going to be in a better space from a communication perspective. From a just pure talent perspective, they believe that Allegretti has the goods to, you know, this is not their words, but, you know, to give them solid play. And when you have the other guys on the line, you can be maybe the weakest at center to a degree. And I think to what extent that's what they're banking on. The thing is, though, they've talked about, hey, we got a competition. We're not saying it's anybody's job. But that competition includes Matt Gulben, a sixth-round rookie. And a guy picked that late in the draft can absolutely become a starter at that position. In year one, I mean, that would mean that a lot of people had an evaluation mistake by thinking that he wasn't, you know, he should fall further. So I'm not putting Matt Gulben in the, hey, he could be a legit starter without injury category. Then you have Julian Good-Jones. He's a familiar name in these parts. He's been around here on the practice squad. I want to say even going to the Ron Rivera era, I do believe, but I mean, look, Julian Good-Jones is 29 years old. He has been around the league a minute, again, practice squads primarily, but he's played one career game. Yeah, 2023 with Washington, one game. That's it. So it's hard for me to believe that makes them feel comfortable enough to go with that combination should it come down to that. Now, the reason why this matters is Allegretti on the first day of camp strained a calf. Dan Quinn told us he sat out practice the last two practices, and Quinn told us yesterday he's probably going to be out a week. Okay, let's just hope for their sake that it is just that short-term deal. But that said, it still brings up the question, what if he misses time during the season? The drop from Allegretti to those other guys, as it stands, you know, you never know what's going to happen. They don't play the game on paper, as you may have heard before. But as it stands, that is a notable drop-off or leads to a lot of uncertainty. And that's why Allegretti, to me, has got to be pretty high on the most indispensable list. Not ahead of Daniels, not ahead of McLaurin, not ahead of, a couple other people. But he's up there on that list. Now, another guy you wouldn't necessarily think about in this regard is tight end John Bates. Washington is going to play a lot more 12 and 13 personnel this year, meaning, you know, two and three tight ends on the field. That is a schematic change that is happening more around the league. The LA Rams, you know, who may be considered to be the favorite to win at least the NFC, if not the Super Bowl, they played a lot of 12 and 13 personnel last year. It is kind of a strategic sweet spot right now, because if you have guys at tight end that can be physical at the line but also be threats as receivers, teams just simply do not have defensive players who are built athletically to deal with that type of player. Now, Washington thinks they may have drafted one in Sonny Styles, because Sonny Styles is an athletic freak, as we saw with what he did at the combine. You know, was like 6'2", 6'3", 245, runs a, you know, blazing 40 time. Like, that guy is a next-level athlete, and that's what Washington thinks they have. He's also a former safety, so we know he's got some coverage skills. But again, Sonny Styles crushed the combine and was the number 7 pick in the draft. These are not players you just are finding all over the place. And we saw last year, frankly, you know, with Washington, that the linebacker core was good in some areas, but in every area, they didn't necessarily have somebody that was like a 3-down linebacker all the time. And that's why it's tough if you're a team if the opponent's going with 12 and 13 personnel. Now, the rub here is John Bates is now also hurt. Hamstring injury. He's out about 2 weeks, Dan Quinn said. I mean, you know, we'll see where he's at in 2 weeks at least. So that removes a tight end, but it's not just that it's a tight end. He is their best blocking tight end. He's one of the better blocking tight ends in the league. And, you know, Ben Sinnott is likely going to get those reps. Ben Sinnott showed, I think, some good things last year as a physical presence on the line, but he's also 10-12 pounds lighter than John Bates. It's not just a plug-and-play situation and you can do all the things that you want to do. They're going to have Chigakonkwo, I think, line up often in the slot or outside. He's a tight end, and sure, he'll have to block here and there, but that's not where you're leaning on him for. So if you don't want Chig to have to be more on the line, then you got to figure out who else is gonna, you're going to have out there in 12 and 13 personnel. Colson Yankoff, who had a nice run after the catch in a 7-on-7 drill yesterday, great athlete, but he's probably more in the Okonkwo range. He's not a bigger guy, but he's a fluid athlete. And I mentioned Sinnott. You've got Lawrence Cager, who just looks the part as a physical presence, but sort of like Good Jones. He's a guy that's a little bit older, has been around the league, and is not just quite clicked in yet. Maybe this is his time, but that's why it's an uncertainty. That's why the indispensable part here is in play. And because, again, they're banking a lot on going with 12 and 13 personnel, you hope that Bates is back sooner than later, and when he is back, is good to go. If you recall last year, on the other side of the ball, if we had said that Dietrich Wise is one of the 10 best players on the team, you'd probably look at me sideways, and that's, you would have been right to do so. But if we're talking, get indispensable players, what was the plan last year to help stop the run? We are right. Saquon Barkley tore them up on the outside in the playoffs during the season. So they're like, we got to get bigger on the line. And bigger on the line, on the edge, the plan was Dietrich Wise. And the second game, Dietrich Wise tears his quad and he's out for the year. And immediately that plan went away. Now it just sort of became, what do we do? You know, how do we kind of fill this in? It got even worse when Dorrance Armstrong went out in week 7 because there was just no real backup plan. Ironically, like last year, the one position they had depth in was offensive tackle. And, you know, fortunately, Laramie Tunsil and Josh Connerly Jr. were healthy and played. I know Tunsil missed a couple games late in the year, but, you know, by and large, they were healthy. That's good. That was a position, at least with Andrew Wiley and Brandon Coleman, Trent Scott, maybe you could have thrown somebody in and had at least somebody serviceable. But that's not where they got hurt. Again, no complaints. But the defensive line, the receiver room had terrible depth last year. Noah Brown and McLaurin got hurt. And so it's just fascinating to look, I think, at not just who are the best players, but who are the most indispensable. And I think there are some guys on this list that you would not necessarily think of in that regard. So 800-636-1067. Who for you is just indispensable? If you want to tell me about Jaden Daniels, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. I'm just going to say kind of, duh, we get that. But who else do you got? But if you want to talk about Jaden as well in general, because obviously they need a lot from him. So 800-636-1067, The Fan. Talking more here about injuries and indispensability with regards to the Commanders and also what I've seen so far through three practices in Ashburn. We'll get to that next here on the team 106.7 The Fan. Listening to, I didn't know the song. Who is this?
Jelly Roll.
Oh, okay. You a fan?
Yeah. He's got some nice songs.
He's got a couple of good times. What a story, though, right? I mean, life is going literally nowhere. Got all the tattoos, and he turns into this massive massive star. That's the American dream right there.
Yeah, I think he lost 70 pounds in 1 year.
Yeah, something like that. I know we got divorced or whatever, but I think sometimes when you get that level of fame that quickly, things can change your perspective. Well, I don't know what's going on in their life, but we'll just leave it at that. Okay, nobody's here to get my takes on Jelly Roll, unless you mean like actual jelly rolls to eat. Then I might have some thoughts. But as I said before the break, I was talking about Washington's injury list, which is unfortunately now includes center Nick Allegretti, tight end John Bates, two guys that, like, you know, if we're saying who's going to make or break this season, they're not names we're necessarily coming up with. Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin. I got a text here from my nephew Ian, who I have questions for about his personal life. We'll have to get to that later. He might have a girl. I don't know. Anyway, he says Laramie Tunsil indispensable. Absolutely, Laramie Tunsil. Now, here's where it gets interesting, right? Laramie Tunsil is one of the best tackles in the league, one of the best players on this team, the anchor for this line. There is no doubt that the line would take a hit if he were to be out. That said, you still have, like, hypothetically, Brandon Coleman could fill in there. Not to say they're the same guy, but Brandon Coleman has held his own when he's played at left tackle. Andrew Wiley has, of course, been a tackle in this league, maybe mostly at right, on the right side. But they do have some guys who are like, okay, at least we feel like we know what they have, what they can offer. Maybe we can take advantage of some of their assets. There just simply is not a body on the team to do what John Bates does. There simply isn't somebody at center who has any type of resume at the pro level to suggest, hey, they could go in and you feel good about it. So that's why it wouldn't even stun me at center if they're a little at all concerned about Allegretti. And again, he's supposed to be back in about a week. That it wouldn't stun me at all if they actually brought in somebody. Yesterday on Saturday, the practice day, they actually did work out about 10 players, including three guys who were centers. A couple of them had some experience. But, you know, at the moment, at least as of this exact time, they have not announced anything about adding anybody. They also brought in some tight ends, including Donald Parham, who, those of you who are real fans, maybe recall he was part of the practice squad here back in 2019. He's actually stuck around the NFL for a bit, hasn't played for about a year or so. So anyway, the question is, who is most indispensable on this team? Or maybe not most, but who are some guys that maybe are off the radar in this discussion? We've got the phone calls are lit up, 800-636-1067. Dave in Virginia has some thoughts here, I believe, or just wants to talk about the Commanders. Dave, what's going on?
Hey, brother. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for calling in. What you thinking?
So I was originally I called in because I wanted to talk on the Allegretti thing. I absolutely agree with you. His intelligence at just on the line is huge. But a lot of people don't know he played center pretty much through high school and college, and then in the pros, you know, he was doing guard more. But I was telling your screener, if you look back on that Detroit Lions game. In the playoffs, he actually, usually the center is the one kind of guiding the O-line, calling the hack count, calling the kind of scheme for how the defense is set up for the O-line. Allegretti actually was the one doing the calling for the offensive line over Biotish during most of that game. He was kind of the brains behind the O-line. And so that to me is a huge thing. It's why I think they have faith in him being a center. So his indispensableness being the center is huge because, you know, they took a gamble letting Biotish go and putting him in there, which I think is fine. I think he's capable of it, but the possibility of injury is very concerning. But I definitely think if he's healthy, he'll be great. I do love the point that your nephew made because I was going to also mention Tunsil on the O-line. He's so, other than Jaden Daniels and Terry McLaurin, those top two, most indispensable, but Tunsil and Allegretti, I think, are going to be the two keys of that O-line because we've got a promising rookie on right tackle, you know, and we have a couple of good guys that we could fit into guard here and there whenever something happens, but center and left tackle really on the offensive side are going to be huge because we're going to be doing, you know, with Blau, I think we're going to be doing more. It's not going to be all about the receivers, like a cliff offense. It's going to be double tight end packages. The O-line is going to have a little more help with them, but also they're going to have to hold up if a tight end goes out for a pass, and they're going to let a guy by to get by him. So on the offensive side, I think that. And then just on the defensive side, Sonny Styles, I think, would be the guy because he's new, and it's a lot of pressure put on him as a new guy, but he's going to be that rock in the middle that hopefully will be around for a long time for us. So I would think him.
Yeah, Styles is on my list. I always write this sort of article. Like, I kind of rank them because, you know, who doesn't like ranking things? And I'm thinking now, I was going to save it for later, but now it feels like because of the specific injuries here that maybe get to it now. And yeah, Tunsil's on the list. Styles is on the list. Now, some of these guys, like in the case of Tunsil, again, there's different levels of indispensability. There's just the, I think in his case, it's like the upside potential, right? If he's not on the field, again, they have some guys that could fill in, but now all of a sudden, maybe you have to give a little more help to that left tackle. Now that blocker can't go elsewhere, or, you know, you have to do different type of formations. There's also just the pure functionality. Again, I'm not saying that the offense would fall apart if Allegretti is not out there. It's just to say that we haven't seen it Good Jones is 29. He's played one career game, and Goulburn's a six-round rookie. And that's where there's like different levels of the indispensability. But Dave, no, you make some great points, and I really appreciate it.
I definitely agree because the center issue, if Allegretti goes out, I think Matt is going to be solid there, and I think Cosby might help out taking over the play calling because he's got the experience to help with that.
Yeah, no, great point. And Dave, I appreciate the call. And obviously the quarterback, you know, can have every system. And, you know, like I know like Drew Brees, I think he used to always call out the line plays. And maybe that's not something they need to put on Jaden Daniels at this point, but just something that can be helpful there as well. Toothpick is on the line. Love it, Toothpick. Talk to me. You got an indispensable thought about the Commanders?
Thanks for taking my call. I really, really do appreciate it. I'm a big history guy. Right? And Ben, if you think back a couple of years into Commanders football team history, we had a problem at the center position. We went through like three centers in 1 year, and the O-line play really suffered because of it. So for me, the Allegretti situation is a problem. It's one that we all thought about, you know, through the off season, especially you guys on the beat. You guys all kept bringing up that center position, and then the first day of practice, it rears its head. So the standing brought about 10 guys in. Let's see if they
But who are the most indispensable? I think there were some guys on this list that you would not necessarily think of.
Hey, too big, we turn that down, but I appreciate the call. Yeah, look, you mentioned a couple years ago that, you know, the last year of Ron Rivera, one guy they brought in was Nick Gates. I remember hearing from people I knew on the Giants beat, Nick's a great guy, you're going to really like cover him, blah, blah, blah. And he had played a little bit. He had started 16 games in 2020. But when he got here, it was clear fairly quickly that this was just not an ideal spot off the bat. And then with, some injuries and otherwise, things went south. In this case, like I said, if they want to move on from Biadasz and they think that Allegretti can really give them more and that communication level and be pretty solid in other areas, that's totally reasonable. And look, I also want to be realistic here. It's not realistic to say that if you have 22 starters, that you have 22 backups that are all equally competent and ready to go. You cannot realistically on any team not have a scenario where you're an injury away from having real questions. Okay, so let's just be clear on that. It's just that because there's also questions, at least from the outside, on the starter, you would think, hey, maybe we need to bring in somebody else to help out. You know, if nothing else, like, sure, you have, from a depth perspective, you have whoever doesn't start between Chris Paul and Brandon Coleman becomes a backup. But, you know, Allegretti would have been the one of the backups on the interior line, and now he is starting. So maybe you could have just used some more depth anyway. It is worth noting that at practice yesterday, Brandon Coleman, Trent Scott were among the guys seen taking some snaps, but to me that just feels more like an emergency. I know that Brandon Coleman, you know, as a way to get Coleman and Paul in the lineup and take advantage of Coleman's athleticism, people have pointed to saying, hey, why not go with him at center? And maybe that's something they can consider longer term, especially if he doesn't win the left guard spot here. I just can't believe that they're going to have him all of a sudden become the center when he has not played that. He's not been really practicing that, you know, to a real extent. They've had him focus on other spots. That just does not seem realistic to me. So that's why that may be a fun upside play to consider, but not a real one, not one based in reality as of today. All right, Charlie in Maryland. Looks like Charlie has a call, and this is a perfect example of this question. Charlie, who's your idea of most indispensable?
Team MVP Tressway. People don't realize that punting also plays an important role in field position, and I feel that if something were to happen to Tressway, then, you know, that could drastically impact the outcome of the game as far as field position is concerned.
I mean, look, there's no doubt about it. If Tressway were to get hurt in a game and, like, they had to go with somebody, you know, whether it was the kicker or somebody else just to sort of fill in, you would see how important Tressway is, because obviously nobody's going to get the distance, the hang time, the direction that a guy like that can do. And so there's no question. Now, if we're playing the indispensable game, there are guys you can pick up off the street who I'm not saying would be as good as Tressway, otherwise they'd be playing. But guys who've punted, that right now they have Matt Hawk, who's a guy who's been in the league, right? He's filling in for Tress as the punter and the holder, which is also a very, very important part of what Tress does. So you could like hypothetically find somebody to do it. Are they going to do it as well? I mean, probably not. And that's where the ceiling part of this comes into play. But at least you could have somebody come in there and like you don't have to change your planning for the most part because of that. But yes, Tressway, incredibly valuable. And again, let's not sleep on the holder situation. That we don't know who's going to be the kicker, Jake Moody or Drew Stevens. I'm sure each of them has their own quirks. They want the ball this way. They're going to do this, whatever it is. Tress is going to be the one who's going to best understand that because he's been around them. So if you bring in somebody else, now all of a sudden, okay, here's another variable. And we know how just a minor tweak, a minor change, a minor football being turned slightly the wrong way can alter what a kicker does. It's going to be crazy, right? One day Tressway is not going to be on this team. I mean, I don't know how we're all going to handle that. Right, Charlie?
Oh, I totally, totally, absolutely agree with what you're saying. He's definitely been a valuable asset since he's been with the team over the last several years. But I think one other person that I also agree with is John Bates as well, too. He's very vital in terms of our blocking scheme, along with Allegretti, and I just hate to see anything happen to Jaden Daniels because of those two players also going down as well.
Absolutely. Charlie, I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. I just realized Wes is probably going, dude, we got to go take a break. So we're going to go take a break. But we've got more to discuss. Mitch Tischler from Monumental Sports is going to join me. We'll talk about training camp observations, pad day coming up, and more. Ben Standing with you here till 1 on 106.7 The Fan. All right, quick segment here. We'll be talk again. Commanders training camp with Mitch Tischler at the top of the hour. I will just note, the Sports Center was just on here in the studio, and they just showed Debo Samuel signing with the Niners. A lot of people have asked, why not here? We'll talk about that. I think it's pretty easy as to why he didn't come back. There are still questions at receiver. That's why Terry McLaurin is very, very high on the indispensable list. I just don't think Debo was a good fit for where they were. And I can explain more about that in a bit. Again, 800-636-1067 Fan. We'll take more of your calls in a bit, but we got more Commanders talk. What did we see at 3 days through of training camp that gets us excited and maybe gets us a little concerned? We'll get to all that next here on 106.7 The Fan.